Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to be able to talk with you today about those green vehicles that we're seeing out there. We have electric vehicles and compressed natural gas vehicles, and there are hybrid vehicles as well. But what we're going to zero in on in the first 45 minutes of the program today are the electric vehicles and the compressed natural gas vehicles. And Chris Schneider is our guest by phone. Chris, been with us a number of times in the past. He's president of Honda Motorworks of La Crosse, and he's starting off on an educational journey to 25 towns in Wisconsin beginning next Tuesday. So want to find out about what this educational journey is all about, but also talk with him about electric vehicles and compressed natural gas vehicles, and certainly take your questions about them. And you can join in a couple of ways. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you like, you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Chris is with us by phone. Chris Schneider, welcome back. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for the opportunity to be involved.
Well, you're going off on an educational odyssey.
We are, and we feel like, you know, knowledge is power, and we're looking forward to empowering campuses and communities across western Wisconsin. The opportunity that we're going to be providing for these campuses and communities is an open discussion about the benefits of natural gas vehicles and electric vehicles, and we're going to be bringing both of those technologies along with us. So people who are listening in communities like Whitehall and Eau Claire and Rice Lake, we will be there next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, we're going to be visiting Superior and Ashland and Rhinelander. And on Thursday, we'll be visiting Wausau, Stevens Point, and Toma. Generally speaking, they'll be at the campuses in those communities, other than Whitehall, which does not have a campus, so we'll be at the city. And we look forward to showing a video that is called Journey to the Zone. Zone is zero oil and no emissions. We'll then have a questions and answers session, and, of course, the viewing of the vehicles, which oftentimes prompts additional questions. So my associate Tom Shea and I are looking forward to getting this adventure started next week.
Well, it should be it should be fun for you and interesting for a lot of people. You like electric vehicles. You like compressed natural gas vehicles. Why?
Well, Larry, the main reason that I like them is that I believe that electric cars provide low-cost alternatives with better environmental impact, and the electricity is produced here in America. And those similar benefits of low refueling prices and environmental impact and national security are the same reasons that I like the compressed natural gas. My New Year's resolution for 07 was to drive full electric, and I've been able to do that for over 2 years now while I'm in town. And it's been very rewarding as I drive around. People will be driving in their cars, and I can see them communicating with their children. You know, look, kids, there's a full electric car, and they'll give me the thumbs up, because there is no tailpipe emissions. And, of course, it gives us the opportunity to communicate with energy producers in trying to help them move to a more green production of energy, like electricity.
Well, we have every line filled here with folks who have questions for you, Chris, so I'm going to turn to the phones. And first to Chris in Madison for a question. Chris, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about whether the big three would ever make such a car like this. They seem really good at making SUVs and monster trucks, but they haven't made a small car in years, much less a hybrid that's small, and an electric car seems totally off their radar.
All right, what about, do you think the big three will ever make an electric vehicle or a compressed natural gas vehicle?
That's a great question, Chris. And my first response would be, when you talk about the big three, I think you're talking about General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler.
Yeah.
Honda actually produces the second most number of cars in America, followed by Toyota and Nissan. Ford is fifth, and Chrysler is sixth. General Motors is the number one automobile manufacturer in the United States. But in terms of answering the question whether General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler will come out with electrics and compressed natural gas vehicles, they have produced natural gas vehicles in the past, and when people are encouraged to buy hybrids, as they have, then those manufacturers eventually will respond to the marketplace. So it definitely, I think, behooves listeners to think about investing in these technologies and sending that signal to General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler to make this transition, and it's an important one. There's a lot of talk about the new Chevy Volt that's coming out, which would be a plug-in hybrid, and that will run a great deal more on electricity, electric motors, and that's a great a direction. And we hope that by having people who are asking questions like yours, Chris, that they'll get the message and they'll hear and respond.
Thanks, Chris, for calling. Let's give Michael in Milwaukee a chance. Michael, hello to you.
Hi, I have a couple of things. Well, one thing first, though, I just want to touch on something that raised the fur on my neck again when I heard the last caller talk, asking about when the American automakers, or they call the so-called Big Three, are going to start producing fuel-efficient vehicles. I drive a Ford Focus, and I'll tell you what, General Motors and Ford, when they built these small cars, they lost money on every small car they made. Or they sold them at just break-even point. American people don't want to buy small cars unless it's legislated by the government to force people to buy fuel-efficient cars. They're not going to buy them. It's as simple as that, especially now that gas is down. But my original question was, as we start going to compressed natural gas or electricity, we have to look for ways to produce the electricity, which we don't have right now, unless we would go to nuclear. And the other thing, compressed natural gas, I keep hearing about gas being in short supply. My heating costs, my home heating costs are going up because supposedly gas is in short supply. How is this going to affect my home heating costs when everybody's running their car with compressed natural gas?
All right. A couple of good questions there.
Yes, very, very good questions, Michael. And as far as the renewable production, you know, there is definitely movement towards that. We're seeing that throughout Wisconsin with more wind turbines going up, more solar panels going on and homes. The thing about electric vehicles that we really like and promote is the manufacturer that we represent is Columbia, and they're produced in Reedsburg, Wisconsin. And so they're a Wisconsin-based corporation. And those vehicles are actually encouraging off-peak electrical usage. So I drive mine to and from work, and then I plug it in as I get home in the evening. So I'm actually not being a burden. And we think that not only is that good because, you know, Dairyland Power or Xcel Energy or Alliant Energy or We Energy's providers here in Wisconsin, they have a certain amount of facilities and training and people and bricks and mortar that they need to have to meet peak demand. They will sell electricity cheaper off-peak because they have all of the systems necessary to produce at peak. In the future, electric cars can be smart, and it only takes me about 1/20 of a tank of electricity, so to speak, in my electric car to get to and from work. I could actually dial in as I come to work, plug in, and I could provide electricity to the grid during the peak demand and then go home and refuel at night. As far as compressed natural gas goes, natural gas is regulated by the Public Service Commission, and so it does tend to be more uniform in its pricing. If you look at the recent report by the Department of Energy, you'll see that that's very true. And also, as they look forward into the future, they are suggesting that gasoline, regular gasoline, will increase on an annual basis at the rate of 2.9% per year through the year 2030. Natural gas prices are expected to go up at 0.2%. So it's a factor of 15, which is the difference. The other part of that question, Michael, is look how long it's taken the hybrid marketplace to get to 2.6% of the market. If it takes that long with natural gas, demand is going to remain relatively stable.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks, Michael, for calling. Appreciate your call. Fred in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling as a blind person, and the only problem that I've heard of with electrical cars is that they don't make any sound. So if you're crossing a street as a blind or visually impaired person, you can't hear them. That can be an unsafe situation. Is anything being done to address that problem?
Hmm.
That's a great question, Fred. And there are people who are working on it. The vehicles do make some noise. You know, there is still tire and suspension noise that is being produced. But it would be my suggestion that we could and should encourage those manufacturers to actually come up with some kind of a noise. The electric motor does make a hum, and it is very audible. So there are some noises that are coming from the vehicle, but it's certainly going to be masked in areas where you have, you know, the louder engine noises. Maybe they could put a series of buttons on that would allow you to choose, you know, today I'd like my electric car to sound like a Harley Davidson, and tomorrow it could sound like a Ferrari.
Well, it's, you know, in partial answer, and I'm sure that Fred knows this, here at the Madison, at UW-Madison, our stop-and-go lights are all operated with by voice as well as by sight. So they say, you know, you can walk across Park Street right now, and then they sort of do a 10, 9, 8, 7, 6 countdown on it. So someone who is visually impaired, at least in those cases, can walk across without worrying about it.
That's great.
Dan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Larry. It's a great pleasure to talk to you. I have a question. I have a vehicle right now that's gasoline. I'm wondering if there's any way to have it converted to compressed natural gas.
Yes, Dan, there are ways for that to happen. I don't want to make it sound too simple. Most gasoline engines were built with the specifications necessary to withstand the differences in compression ratios and temperatures that natural gas burns. Many of the converted vehicles out there right now are bi-fuel. They will run on gasoline and natural gas. But it does go through a procedure, an EPA procedure. You might remember back, you know, 30 years ago when General Motors took a gasoline engine and said, you're now a diesel. Well, those engines weren't well designed to withstand the differences in the compression ratios. Most gasoline engines can go to natural gas, but they go through a certification process. And so if you are talking to someone about having your vehicle converted, you're going to want to make sure that it's going to be EPA certified.
Does it matter if a vehicle has a carburetor or if it's fuel injected?
That will make a difference as to how they will install the system and the cost of the system. But no, it can be done on either a carbureted or a fuel injected vehicle. The expense will be greater in the case of the carbureted vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful. Can I ask one more?
Sure.
Is there anywhere in Wisconsin that does the conversion?
I have an associate who is the fuel maker dealer here in La Crosse who is looking into becoming a converter, but he is not certified yet, Dan. If there are any listeners out there, that are aware of an EPA-certified compressed natural gas converter, I would encourage them to call in and let us know where you're located and how we can get in touch with you.
Okay. Dan, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today about electric vehicles and compressed natural gas vehicles with Chris Schneider, president of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse. He's starting off on an educational journey to 25 towns in Wisconsin beginning next Tuesday. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about electric vehicles or compressed natural gas vehicles, I hope you'll join in. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Chris Schneider, and the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Steve in Cascade next. Steve, hi, thank you for waiting.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what can we do for you?
I'm pretty excited about this. I'm a big believer in the green movement, but what I think I'd like to see done, and we forget about, is the vehicles that have to move the cattle and the big and the trucks and have to move this country. And when we and I don't understand why we can't run. We've got a truck in here in town that's been run on propane. It's been converted. I mean, it's unbelievable how efficient it is. I don't understand why we can't use the coal, liquefy it, and run it in natural gas. I don't know what, you know, what the problem is.
Well, Chris, have you got an idea?
Well, Steve, when we talk about these alternative fuels, we oftentimes have to look way back in history. I mean, electric vehicles go back to the 1830s and 40s. Hybrids go back over 100 years ago. And so what we see is, you know, advancing and retarding of marketplaces. And I think that many would point to the oil industry and say that there are people who have been trying to sidetrack the marketplace with you know oil prices and supply and demand issues, but really electric motors are so much more capable of pulling loads like you're talking about. I mean, essentially, trains are diesel electric hybrids and they're being propelled with electric motors. Electric motors, when you ask them to go to work, they provide almost 100% of their torque from the first RPM, so they're very, very high-performance engines. The other thing is that they're a lot more efficient at using the energy. They generally provide about five times the efficiency of a typical internal combustion engine. So I think it's very important that we make this movement, and it's opportunities like this one, you know, with Larry's program, talking to, you know, the state of Wisconsin and beyond about some of these alternatives and how we can move them into our lives on a regular basis. And so thank you for being involved.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much for calling, Steve. And Ben in Oconomowoc, we're on to you next. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
I am a member of a growing movement of people that are interested in taking their transportation destiny into their own hands. Two summers ago, I built an electric motorcycle, and this last summer, I built an electric car, and they really are amazingly efficient. I've done the math to figure out what they would get in terms of miles per gallon. The car gets the equivalent of 130 miles per gallon. A motorcycle gets the equivalent of around 320. And what I really like about them is that electric vehicles can be run on renewable energy. So even though I don't have solar panels or a windmill at my house, I can buy renewable energy through a program and get it over the grid, and those programs are available through We Energies or Wisconsin Public Power or all sorts of different power utilities. So it's really been a lot of fun. It's been less difficult than you'd think to convert to electric, and it's really been working out very well for me.
Yeah. What kind of car did you choose to electrify, Ben?
It's a 1996 Geo Metro.
Mm-hmm.
It's got driver and passenger airbags on it,
mm-hmm.
and it's absolutely fantastic for zipping around town, doing all my grocery shopping and errands, and it's been great.
What kind of range do you get out of it?
I only get about 20 miles,
mm-hmm.
but keeping in mind that I live about 2 miles from the grocery store,
sure.
the library, all those things, it's actually more than needed.
I hear what you're saying. In the over 2 years that I've been driving electric, you know, the range on my vehicle is about 50 miles, and it's very rare that I go much over 10, 12 miles in any given day, usually a lot less than that.
And if anybody's interested in building their own electric vehicles, there's a lot of great websites. One of them is called ecomoder.com, ecomoder.com, people who modify a vehicle for economy and ecology. And there's a lot of great information on just getting the best gas mileage you can out of your ordinary car on there as well.
All right. Ben, thank you very much for calling. So, Chris, there's a guy who just went off and did it on his own.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I ran into a gentleman who electrified in a motorcycle during one of the early hybrid events that we participated back in 2003 in Winona, Minnesota. So, you know, there's certainly examples of people who are willing and able to go out on their own, and congratulations.
Aaron in Shatek, on to you now. Hi, Aaron.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is, the energy that we currently put into manufacturing gasoline automobiles versus the energy we'd have to put into manufacturing an electric vehicle, I can't see where, do we save enough on the electric vehicle for the extra cost that goes into manufacturing them?
Well, that's a great perspective on it, Aaron, and the simple answer is, in an electric motor, you have two moving components, so not only is it very easy to manufacture, but it's also easy to maintain and repair. So I would say to you that for many reasons, including the cost of production, electric vehicles are the vehicles in our future.
Cells. I mean, to replace one of those batteries in electric cars is costly, and to make the batteries costly, I can't see where you're gaining the benefits back.
Yeah.
Well, the batteries, you know, in the vehicle that I'm driving are lead-acid batteries, and they're very renewable. They're also relatively inexpensive. I could replace all of the batteries in my vehicle currently for about $600, and I need to think about doing that every 3 or 4 years. When you're talking about getting the equivalent of, you know, 130 miles per gallon, like Ben in Economowalk is getting in his Metro, it's pretty easy to do the math and say that you're going to be traveling for about 3 cents a mile rather than 30 cents a mile in a gasoline-powered vehicle. And the math definitely makes sense in the case of electric motors. And the main reason that it does is that they are five times more effective at forward propulsion than internal combustion engines. So for production reasons, definitely I see that electric motors, and of course we're very excited at Honda to have the Honda Clarity fuel cell car, which is propelled with an electric motor, but being the fuel is hydrogen, and then the tailpipe emissions are water. So that's eventually where we want to get to, and that's the real beauty of compressed natural gas. If we can increase the infrastructure of natural gas refueling throughout the state, and I kind of have to get on to the stump a little bit here and congratulate Wisconsin. We're really very fortunate to have a fair amount of commercial natural gas refueling on the east side of the state. You know, basically from Kenosha to Appleton, you're never more than about a half an hour away from commercial refueling. Now we need to work on the western part, and that's why my associate Tom Shea and I are going to saddle up our pony and take compressed natural gas and electric vehicle. And, Aaron, we'd encourage you to come out to Rice Lake from 3 to 4 o'clock on January 27th. We'll be at the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, and you can come out and ask some more questions and see the vehicles and be encouraged by them being near your community. But we'll be doing this tour to try to get communities on the west side of Wisconsin to help put in natural gas refueling, and then that natural gas can be steam reformed at that pump and provide hydrogen, and so natural gas can be the pipeline for the hydrogen highway in the future.
Hmm. Aaron, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Ron in Winona, Minnesota, on to you. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
Hello, Ron.
Yeah,
how's things upriver today?
The river is frozen.
Yeah, Frozen River Film Festival this weekend.
Exactly. That's the reason I'm calling.
Great.
And I thought Wisconsin listeners might like to know about that and that you're going to be here.
Yeah, I'll be there Sunday at 10:30. But there's lots of great events taking place at the Frozen River Film Festival.
Right.
At the campus of Winona State University.
Right.
Are you involved in it, Ron?
I will be volunteering, yes.
Good for you.
And what vehicles will you have here?
We will have neighborhood electric vehicles and compressed natural gas. And, of course, Winona State has hybrid vehicles in their fleet, and they had them present last year as well.
Very cool. And so that event is, you're speaking on Sunday, Chris?
Sunday at 10:30. And you can get details on the website FRFF, which stands for FrozenRiverFilmFestival.org, FRFF.org. Wonderful event, lots of great films, good workshops, and then there's some real neat vendors there as well.
Very cool. Ron, thank you. Appreciate the call. And Jacqueline in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Jacqueline.
My question is similar to the one a couple calls ago about the economicality of it, because my understanding of the production vehicle, Chevy Volt, is going to be priced at $40,000 per vehicle. And I just don't see without some kind of government support that people are going to rush right out and buy a $40,000 electric vehicle. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, I think, you know, that's a very valid point when you're talking specifically about the Chevy Volt. But, you know, Honda is coming out with a hybrid for Earth Day called the Insight, and it's going to be priced less than $20,000. It's not going to be a plug-in like the Volt is expected to be. So there are some, you know, benefits of having the plug-in hybrid that the Insight won't. But, you know, when you're talking about a car that's significantly lower priced than the average new vehicle, I think that it's really important to recognize manufacturers who are coming and doing what they said, making hybrids and making environmentally sensitive, fuel-efficient cars more affordable for the general public. And so let's not just take the Volt as the exception to the affordability rule. Let's take a look at what really is being done out there and the good things that are happening, and celebrate it and say, wow, this is really exciting. And the car is really beautiful. You know, it's a four-door hatchback, so it's going to provide seating for five passengers, and it's got, you know, 16 cubic feet of storage area. So it's really going to meet the demands for a lot of Americans and do that very affordably.
Todd in La Crosse wondered about the comparison of greenhouse gases from using gas from a gas-powered car, let's say, to an electric car.
Yeah, that's a good one, Todd. We are going to be conducting a seminar associated with this tour we're going on April 17th here, and we'd encourage you to come down and ask questions like that. It will also be on the web. It'll be a webinar, and the details of that will be on hope3.org, H-O-P-E, and then the number 3.org, where we'll be encouraging people to come here and ask those types of questions. Now, I've not done this analysis myself, Todd, but I've read it often enough that greenhouse gas emissions, even factoring in the coal-fired electrical energy that we generally use here, you know, in La Crosse, about 78% of our energy is coal-fired. The greenhouse gases is still 30% lower in full electric vehicles than internal combustion engines. So there is a benefit, and obviously there would be a great benefit in us encouraging our energy companies to move towards renewable. And, you know, eventually, as nanotechnology starts affecting our ability to collect solar energy with solar panels, more and more vehicles will come with solar panels on them that will allow us to collect energy, like Columbia is working on this in Reedsburg, where when I park my vehicle out here, rather than plugging in, it could just sit out in the sunshine and it could recharge, you know, right out there in Mother Nature.
Oh, that would be a... So those would probably wind up in the roof, I would think, eh?
The roof, you know, the trunk areas, anything that would be, you know, potentially being able to face, you know, the southern exposures, you know, any little bit can help.
Hmm.
Honda produced the Dream, which was kind of a cockroach-shaped vehicle that was able to travel the entire continent of Australia on solar power only.
Oh.
So it can be done. It's just a matter of, you know, would it be able to provide the necessary storage and passengers for how most Americans drive today? And the answer is no, not yet. But it's moving there. And every time that you invest in advanced technology, you're sending a signal to the manufacturer and the government that it's important that we continue this movement. So, you know, don't necessarily save your $40,000 for the Chevy Volt, but if you've got the money and you're going to spend it on a Ferrari and spend, you know, 3-4 times that much money, why not get 3 or 4 Chevy Volts and then share with your family or your neighbor?
Joe in Green Bay is up next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I just wanted to check on the conceivability. I'm rebuilding a Jeep right now, an old CJ7, and we're, you know, it's more for like an off-road vehicle, but we're looking at doing either like biodiesel or compressed natural gas, maybe along that lines. But I was wondering the conceivability of actually doing it as an electric vehicle, if you'd be able to have the power to be able to, you know, get off-road and do some of that kind of stuff with that type of vehicle, or if you're better off with like a diesel electric.
Well, to answer the one question, Joe, could an electric motor provide the power necessary? And the answer is absolutely. You know, if your CJ7 has a 250 horsepower engine in it now, you could purchase a 250 horsepower or 250 foot-pounds of torque electric motor, and it would actually provide you with better acceleration and more efficiency than what you've got in the gasoline engine. There's a wonderful video that's out there right now about a guy who's taken a Datsun 510. So, you know, this is even before they changed their name to Nissan.
Mm-hmm.
And he put an electric motor in it, and he's out in California, and he's blowing off Corvettes and Porsches and Ferraris. I mean, electric motors, you know, their performance is outstanding. So, you know, if you're out off-roading, Joe, and there's a guy that shows up in an electric CJ, don't race him title for title up that cliff, because he's going to beat you.
All right. Aaron in Harvard, Illinois, on to you. Hi.
Okay, I'm going to get this all screwed up, but my father-in-law is a farmer, and he was telling me that there's new technology battery that's iron phosphorus, I think, and he was saying that these batteries could be ground up and sewn into the ground for fertilizer even. And that they're very biofriendly. Is that true?
I haven't been doing very much study in the battery technologies. There's some wonderful work that's being done here in Wisconsin. You know, Rayovac, people in the Madison area, and Johnson Controls in Milwaukee, and there might be someone, you know, like Merle. Oh gosh, and I'm forgetting his last name now. Who's a battery expert who might be listening, who could provide more knowledge in that area. But, yeah, I mean, there are ways for us to work with various metals, and some of those metals, like phosphorus, have benefit for our soils. Generally speaking, if we can keep the recycling process and replace those batteries, with that, for instance, in the case of nickel metal hydride batteries, those batteries are being recycled. In the case of lead acid batteries, they're the most highly recycled component in the automobile, and one of the most highly recycled components period, of all of the things that we are producing in our world today. So, yeah, there's a lot of exciting things that are out there, Aaron, and thanks for calling in from Illinois. Do you attend the Illinois Energy Fair there in Oregon, Illinois, not too far from you?
No, not as of yet. I'll be honest with you. I'm a computer programmer, and we started getting into the farmer markets.
Uh-huh.
And quite the education as you begin to learn how things cycle through.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And Phil in Crystal Lake, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I just wanted to ask about the EV1. Supposedly that was a good design as to whether that could be used again and what happened to it. And its batteries supposedly at a range of 150 miles, but supposedly the patent for those was bought by Exxon Oil, and they're still holding it.
Chris, know anything about that?
Well, there's some good information that's out there about the, you know, things like the EV1. I think probably the one that comes to the top of my mind would be to watch the movie Who Killed the Electric Car. As far as the EV1, you know, the aerodynamics on it were good, but they weren't as good as the Honda Insight. So there are other vehicles out there that would show you, you know, aerodynamics and putting the whole package together. As far as battery technology, I think that we're finally getting to the point where we as Americans understand that we are transferring our wealth to the Middle East at the greatest rate in the history of the world, and that we need to make a transition, and that transition could be electric, it could be compressed natural gas, it could be a combination of those as we move towards technologies like fuel cell. And so there's going to be a lot of work that's been done by battery manufacturers to move that forward and both be environmentally, or I should say more environmentally sensitive as we do it, and more efficient. And so the movie Who Killed the Electric Cars, there's one of the inventors from Michigan who is quoted in there many times in talking about how frustrated he was in trying to move his technology forward. So, yeah, there's been some roadblocks in the past, Phil, but we need to learn how to leap over them and keep moving in the right direction. Now, Crystal Lake, Illinois, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did the EV1 work well or not?
Well, you know, when you're talking about the range of 150 miles, you're talking about someone who is a very gentle driver. He would be, in many minds, need to be considered a hypermiler. And most Americans don't drive their vehicles that way. We certainly encourage them to learn how to drive more effectively, but the range on the EV1, if you drove it like many people do today, would not be anywhere near the 150 miles.
Mm. And I thank you very much for calling, Phil. And Chris, I thank you so much. And to go back to your presentations, your educational journey, for people who want to know where you're going to be, I think probably the best way is just to go to that website.
Hope3.org is a great way. Or if you're a member of PickensPlan.com, you can go to my page. I'm in La Crosse, Wisconsin. You can sort by the city and find my page and look at the details of the events if you're not finding it on Hope3.org. We call it the Early Earth Day Odyssey. So if you see on Hope3.org, Early Earth Day Odyssey, click on that and it'll give you the details of the communities that we're going to be visiting starting next week.
Chris, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. Good luck on your journey.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Appreciate it. Chris Schneider is president of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse, starting off on an educational journey to 25 towns in Wisconsin, and that begins next Tuesday. And again, go to Hope3, and that's the number 3, so it's hope3.org, and you can find out about his educational presentations around the state, particularly in the western portion of the state. Well, coming up, we're going to talk with you about electric hybrids. We talked electric vehicles and compressed natural gas, and now we're going to turn our attention to gasoline electric hybrid vehicles with Eric Powers, who heads the Madison Hybrid Group. That coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.